Okay, we're going to move to the next item on the agenda. Bill Herber, are you? He's almost ready to go, looks like. Let you take it over.
Thank you, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, members of the board. For the record, my name is Bill Herber, Deputy Director for Administration, and I promise that's the last time you'll hear that. Today, I want to talk to you you've actually heard quite a bit about our budget to date. You know, Nancy started out this morning with the magnitude of the budget in front of us, and be hard-pressed to not hear about a lot of the work that has to be done. You heard a lot about it from Tim and Doug this morning, but I'll try to fill in the gaps. So I'll walk you through the budgetary components of our 21-23 legislatively adopted budget. And I'll be taking you through a very technical kind of run through of it. We do have the division chiefs and program managers available if you want to ask some programmatic questions that are beyond kind of the budgetary numbers available. So I'm trying to leave some time, but I know we're already running short, so we'll see how that goes. And at the end, I'll give you a brief financial status report and touch on MGO briefly as well. Both the financial report and a more comprehensive budget summary is in your packet, so I would point you to those products for any detail of items that we may not touch on during this report. Certainly any questions you can follow up on. So given that we do have some new board members, I did want to touch on a couple of definitions and timeframes in front of us on how our budget got to this point, because I will be comparing the legislatively adopted budget to things called the current service level or the agency request budget. So I wanted to just kind of frame up what those things are. So the current service level is a funding available to an agency to provide current services absent any one-time investments in a previous biennium. So things that are in our base budget, core functions we provide, that's our current service level. Agency request budget, and that's the vehicle where the board has input into how the agency moves forward with the budget, is the where we take our current service level and then apply policy option packages or ideas and concepts to add either funding capacity, legislative changes into our current service level budget. And we submit that to the governor's office as our agency request budget. Like I said, that's where the board interfaces with our efforts. And you'll see that coming up just next year. You know, we're just now talking about our new budget. And in just a few months, we'll be talking about the next one to come. So at the beginning of every even number year, we start the process with the agency request budget. That ultimately ends up at the end of the year as the governor's recommended budget, and then ultimately the adopted budget that is in front of us today. And that will morph as we go through the biennium into the legislatively approved budget. So as a sort, excuse me, my voice is kind of giving up. As we go through short sessions or emergency board actions, our budget gets modified into the legislatively approved budget. And it's very significant here at forestry because as we deal with large fire costs, we get a lot of general fund money to pay for the net costs, and that increases our budget substantially. So you will see a big difference between this legislatively adopted budget that we start with this biennium and then ultimately at the end with our legislatively approved budget. Some of the mechanics behind the process. One caveat here is we are still auditing and reconciling this budget. This is a massive investment with lots of parts and pieces, a lot of work behind it on the technical side. Budget staff are currently working through all the financial and fiscal impact statements. And our final Orbitz audit for this budget is due up mid-September. So that's the length of time it takes to kind of get this budget into the books and moving forward. We are currently working under a continuing resolution because our budget has not been signed by the governors yet. So that gives us a portion of our current service level to operate on currently while that LAB gets finalized. So with that, let's start talking about how we got here. So our budget had many pieces of legislation in play. Nancy talked a little bit about this morning, but certainly all this legislation added to the complexity of this budget or what's a typical process. So our budget is within Senate Bill 5518, and basically that's our CSL with some agency policy option packages. as well as some governor's office policy option packages and LFO packages. And we'll talk a little bit about those a little later on. Pretty unique, this biennium. The big piece of legislation, of course, that you've been hearing about all morning is Senate Bill 762, the wildfire omnibus bill. I won't get into the details on the fire protection side because you've heard Tim and Doug talk about that this morning. But there was also a big program to reduce implement a program for reduction of wildfire risk, and that was a $20 million investment, as well as a small woodland grant program, a $5 million investment in that legislation. And of course, that gets folded into our budget. So you'll see those numbers represented in the next slide. And then we have House Bill 5006, the budget reconciliation bill. I'll go to detail on this because there's a lot of parts and pieces, very much miscellaneous legislation on all fronts of the agency. And then Senate Bill 5506 and Senate Bill 5505, capital construction and bond authorization, has to do with our capital construction, deferred maintenance, things of that nature. Probably won't talk a lot about that because it's, you know, kind of moving some slow moving processes forward. So this marks this budget marks a significant investment into the department on all fronts. As Nancy mentioned out the gate, 26% increase in capacity and programs across the department in all fund types. Most significant was a nearly $74 million general fund investment, which equates to roughly a 78% increase for the department's general fund appropriation. And that's significant at this point in time. We, on fire protection, we have the availability to use their general fund appropriation to pay for large fire costs. So as we move into this fire season, that money is available to us. So that's good to hear that we have so much general fund there. In addition, is a massive investment in workforce capacity. Nancy mentioned 186 positions added across almost all programs, which is a 16% increase in our workforce. And beyond that, in the second to last column, you'll see we received quite a bit additional full-time equivalent months on existing positions. This is important. It's primarily seasonal positions, forest officers, suppression specialists, dispatchers. What this did was add months to their season so we can accommodate the ever-growing fire season, starting early, ending later. So it's those shoulder pieces. So we got quite a few positions or months added to those positions, which is a great need for our capacity in those seasonal months. As I said, the position investment was across the department, except less state forests. You'll notice them not on this chart. This chart does show a distribution of positions across the programs. So with, you can see the majority of it was an investment into fire protection capacity. Besides being across the department, it was across all functions within these programs. So within fire, you have extra capacity at the division level, things like prescribed fire coordinator, policy planning, deputy, GIS specialist, but also within the field. I mentioned those forest officers, but you also have equipment operators, admin support. So a lot of fire protection capacity at all levels in the organization. On the administration front, we have our programs in finance, budget, HR, public affairs, facilities, and our modernization program for work on MGO got increases. A lot of it was to support the 762 efforts, which also translate into the partnership and planning program there with an investment for their fuels mitigation program in 762, but also additional programs to further their existing GNA work. And then private forest to get a few positions. So positions come in many forms. And as you can see here, the majority of our positions are permanent full-time positions. So that's important because that's added capacity within department year round. And that provides us the breathing room to get a lot of other things done beyond just a fire during the fire season. We did get a significant seasonal increase, 78 positions, and those are those forest officers, dispatchers, wildfire suppression specialists. So those are boots on the ground for fire suppression during those times. We did get a handful of limited duration positions to focus on some temporal tasks, such as MGO, Senate Bill 1602, things of that nature that should be done within the biennium. Those comparisons I just showed you were to our CSL, CSL versus LAB. Now I want to step back into the agency request budget because we did put a lot of policy option packages forward as we started this biennial budget process. So I kind of mark this up because typically this is straightforward. An agency requests a policy option package. The governor either excludes it or includes it into the governor's budget, and then legislatures either approve it or deny it. Ours took quite a few different paths this go around. Either they were funded or they were partially funded within our budget or partially or fully funded outside of our budget. And that's where Senate Bill 762 came into play, which is all the complexity on the nuts and bolts of our budget. So I kind of highlighted that with the check marks and the X's there. The green marks is representative of fully funded in Senate Bill 5518, our biennial budget, and a blue means it was funded either partially in our budget or somewhere outside in differing legislation. But I'll run down the list of ones to note. The first one, our fire protection POP 100, fire protection for severity, $8 million. This is a standard one. It's very much technical. We ask for it in our agency request budget, but that money gets moved into the e-board so we can request those funds as fire seasons move forward. Next, policy option package 101. This was a big one for us when we started our ARB. It was capacity on all fronts for fire protection. But given the Labor Day fires and in our work with 7262, there was some newer investments of capacity. And so that was modified. So there you can see our original request was about $7 million. It ultimately ended up being $6 million, and the position's looking a little different than we originally requested, ultimately manifesting in 7262. POPs 102, 130, and 150. They were not funded in any manner. You can see State Forest only POP Recreation Education Interpretation. That is a POP. They've moved forward several biennia, didn't gain any traction once again. POP 151, FPA Effectiveness and Implementation. This was partially funded in House Bill 5006 with three positions focused on technical assistance to landowners in the form of a riparian monitor, forest roads, and geotech specialists. So it was nice to get some capacity in private forest on that front. In addition, for private forest, sudden oak death, we did get $1.7 million in our budget package, but we did not get the nine positions we requested as part of that. And thanks, Kyle. Finally, 160, forest climate change mitigation and adaption. We did put request nine positions for that work. It was not funded. The idea there was we did get a lot of capacity in discussions with legislative fiscal office that our additional capacity would allow us to accommodate that work somewhere else. And then moving along, federal forest restoration, that POP was modified heavily through Senate Bill 762. That was originally planned to further our GNA program. Of course, they did roll in the fuels mitigation grant program, and those are the positions to support that $20 million grant investment. 170 was a deferred maintenance bill. That is a requirement every month or every biennium for agencies to request 2% of their replacement costs as deferred maintenance. Typically, it's just a process, but and usually is not funded, but we did get that funding this go around. So we're pretty excited about that $5 million. It was funded in House Bill 5006 via bonding. So we'll have that money available for deferred maintenance activities within our facilities operating and capital investment account process. Next, we had a suite of packages within administration on all fronts. 171 was for our automated vehicle location system, as well as some communication techs to implement that program, and a safety specialist for the department. We also had diversity, equity, and inclusion, two positions there to focus on those efforts, as well as a handful of administrative positions in quite a few programs for modernization efforts. All of those three POPs were fully funded, so we're excited to get a lot of capacity on that front. Finally, we do have a couple of large capital projects moving along, our Toledo and Santiam building replacements. We did get some limited duration capacity in POP 174 through House Bill 5506 to move that along. And finally, some bonding in POP 175 went through in Bill 5506 as well to further our Toledo facility replacement. So those were the majority of our requested policy option packages in our agency request budget. I did mention we did get some packages outside of that normal request. Some of them are very technical in nature, as that analyst adjustment or Microsoft 365 consolidations. Those are statewide adjustments that are typically made on any executive branch agency. POP 200 is unique. It is focused on MGO recommendations. There was a particular recommendation in the MGO report that highlighted the need for accountants to oversee area business operations. And this is that investment. You can see four positions, three area business coordinator positions, which are accountants, and then one accountant in the revenue program for central administration. So big part of moving quite a few of the MGO recommendations forward. So we're excited to have that capacity. And next we had package 801, which was an LFO adjustment. This added three limited durations for MGO support. And that is the project manager that Nancy spoke of that we hired Cal into, as well as a two positions to facilitate some of that work. In addition, there was $500,000 to further our contract with MGO, not only in oversight, but in staff augmentation services. We are working with MGO on a statement of work on what that looks like, as well as there was a couple of LD positions to or limited duration positions to finish up the work on Senate Bill 1602. That's the Ferns notification program. The next one, deferred maintenance, I talked about that. So House Bill 5006, the budget reconciliation, had a lot of parts and pieces to it. Of note, there is a seedling nursery grant, $5 million to administer a program to provide to businesses to support seedling development. Then three positions, 2.25 FTE for rangeland associations to expand the definition of what rangelands are and to support that effort. And then finally, we did get those three positions in forest or private forest for FPA support I mentioned earlier. Within 5006 was also quite a few additional adjustments. Adjustments over DAS service charges, capital construction. Of note there, I think it's the big one at the bottom, Senate Bill 762. I'm not going to go into details there. You've heard quite a bit about that, but the number is staggering, $70 million $70 million investment nearly into 80 positions. So a massive piece of legislation that the agency definitely appreciates. Couple important items to note within our budget is part of Senate Bill 762 was a landowner offset for potential increases in forest patrol assessments due to the change or to the position additions within Senate Bill 762. So our landowner or our fire positions are split funded between the general fund and landowner dollars. When we originally worked with the governor's office and others on an investment for additional fire positions, the thought that was that they would be fully funded by the general fund. Ultimately, both within our budget and within Senate Bill 762, these positions came in at our normal split for fire protection assessments. So there was $15 million added to Senate Bill 762 to offset those splits and essentially make them fully general fund funded for the biennium. It was a one-time investment per Senate Bill 762. So that's a item of note there. And lastly, our harvest tax bill did not get passed this session, which leaves a hole in the funding of private forest FPA work for three quarters of the biennium. The way it's calculated, we do have a quarter of biennium of funding, but that is about a $7.5 million gap right now as we move forward. We do have commitment from legislative leadership that this will be addressed in the coming short session. So there's a few approaches that this can take, but more to come on the harvest tax issue. And that's my run through of the budget at a technical level. And it looks like I'm catching us up on time. So that's a good thing. So I don't know if we have any questions. And if so, I can address them. If not, we can get into finances and MGO real quickly.
Any questions? Member McComb.
Bill, this is really minor and I apologize, but on fire protection policy option packages, it lists positions since FTE, 19 positions and 20.5 FTE.
How's that work?
I don't understand.
No, I actually fully anticipated that question. You know, that's state budgeting math there. No, there was, as I mentioned earlier in the slides, where we got in we received a 186 positions, but we received quite a bit additional FTE because a lot of those FTE months were on positions currently within our budget, and we just expanded their FTE count. So for example, we would have 6 month seasonal. It's now an 8 month seasonal. Those additional FTE are some of those things.
Go ahead, Carla.
Bill, it's Carla Chambers. One question. With the investments under Senate Bill 5518, do we have adequate investment now beyond with the MGO recommendations and dollars and the LFO analysis? Do we have the adequate investment in the financial / accounting realm to employ the MGO report fully and rebuild, you know, some of the systems and build the systems that are necessary for ongoing financial support and information?
Yes, Carla, that's a great question. And I actually believe we do. Certainly, MGO recommendations take a lot more work than just administrative staff focusing on their efforts. There's a lot that interfaces with how business is done in the district. So there's a lot of capacity needs on all aspects of the organization, which may or may not be addressed in those particular cases. But from the recommendations that stand, the 28 recommendations or the 24 now that we've checked four off, which I'll get to in a second, some of the capacity needs were in that realm that these investments did fill. So I feel we're in a very good place. I mentioned policy option package 173 with the admin modernization added some capacity to admin. Two of those positions were to our admin modernization program, which already houses three developers that are solely focused on modernization efforts. One of those additions was a manager to that position, so they'll be able to focus on system implementation absent any need to work on, you know, existing programs, because that's usually the rub there is people have a day job when we're trying to also do these improvement efforts. And that extra capacity was truly that extra capacity. Certainly the accountants, the four added the four added, which is three in the areas, those three area ones are going to be very busy. The accountant we're adding centrally is going to be busy as well, but it gets to be mixed into our current suite of accountants. So there's a leveraging of work. So we provide ourselves a lot of capacity through this budget, where I'm pretty optimistic we're going to make some massive inroads on MGO recommendations and fully address them.
So there's so much good news here, but this is probably more of a question for Nancy or Doug, but none of this is really going to improve our position for this year in terms of fire. Is that correct? I mean, we're not going to see any kind of significant benefit until next year. Am I wrong to say that?
I'll let Doug speak more specifically to this. I think I was talking at lunch a little bit that, you know, we are in this season at a minimum. You know, we weren't able to necessarily leverage all the new hiring capacity, but certainly from a budgetary perspective, assuming this season lasts as we forecast it to be the funding will be there to carry those additional seasonal months. So that's very positive. I think the other one for me is that, you know, we're already, you know, adding surge capacity, as you saw as we walked around here today at lunch, to be able to add some immediate capacity to utilize some of that funding while we go out for the longer term recruitment. But go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, Chair Kelly, Doug Graff for the record. Absolutely, yes. And what I emphasized earlier about the e-board investment in January was one of the proactive approaches the legislature and governor's office took to set us up for success. So we were able to hire limited duration positions. And then when 762 passes, you know, we've got the funding to carry forward those until we ultimately, you know, hire those position, advertise and hire positions permanently. So it gave us a boost on the permanent side at a limited duration basis, which allows me to put Tim in the position he was now and get started on that work. So that's just a clear example of how that capacity was there. The seasonal is a positions is an obvious one. I emphasize that. And the other place we didn't talk much about was the severity package. So the governor's the January e-board placed $5 million of emergency dollars for severity. And those early season fires, we've flown well over 300 hours prior to 762 passage of the legislature. And that is atypical for us. We usually don't have those dollars. And those early catches absolutely made a difference, in particular in the gorge fires without those scoopers, which was a new resource. We were not going to catch some of those fires the way we did in the spring. So a very proactive approach this year. Largely going to take significant time to realize full exposure. I think I heard State Forest have mentioned a year of implementation. I think that's very, very fair, especially coming out of a season like that for long-term, you know, stability. But a proactive approach allowed us to be reactive here and ready for this fire season.
So the answer is we are seeing direct benefits this year and we'll be able to pay our bills, it appears.
Yeah, on that point, Jim, Chair Kelly, I would like to, hands down, we are absolutely appreciative of everything that we've received in the investments and the positions. That said, it would be irresponsible if we said we had a solution for a long-time fix to large fire funding. And this budget, I believe, positions the agency well, and you're going to hear this from Bill Moore here in a minute, for this first year of the biennium. But we know we have a trend of a decade now plus, right, with large fire costs and the accumulation of that. Even with the improved processes and the systems, if we were to again have two extraordinary you know, the average $70 million plus net over the next 2 years, in that second year, we would be challenged. So building back that confidence, you know, striving to reestablish that ability to borrow money from the Treasury is going to be critical. And quite honestly, I still think that, you know, as a state as a whole, determining a long-term durable solution for the funding of large fire costs in Oregon across not just Department of Forestry, but the Oregon State Fire Marshal's own challenges and, frankly, other agencies, not unlike other disaster, you know, relief planning and funding. So don't want to lose sight of that. And we'll partner with you on that.
Yeah, well, congratulations on the amount of progress that you've made to bring us to the point or to get us to the point eventually where we are a credible partner in those conversations with our government partners.
Oh, thank you all.
Chandra Fry for the record. Thanks for the presentation, Bill. I just wanted to confirm something real quick. The positions that you have in partnership and planning, the 28 positions, are those all a result of POP 161? Or no, I'm sorry, not 161. No, yeah, 161, the Federal Forest Restoration. Those are all
they are
those positions. Okay.
Yes, they are. The nuance there is that 13 of them were a result of Senate Bill 762.
Right.
So we requested POP 161 well before any of these discussions to further our GNA program. And then 762 came along with the fuels mitigation program, and those positions were moved into POP 161. But they are a resultant of 161.
Okay. And are some of those positions elsewhere? Because it looks like you did you get 31 there? But you have 28 over here.
No,
not to get, I'm just trying 20, to be
28. I mentioned the admin positions that are supporting 762.
Okay.
Three of those positions in POP 161 are administrative positions along procurement, finances, those things. So they slide into the administration box.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
A lot of nuances to this budget. I appreciate the questions. Thank you. So a cash report. Nancy mentioned earlier that we are working on new reporting as we move forward next month. And I don't need the presentation, Jason. There's nothing on there besides our logo, which is pretty cool, but we can take that down. So I didn't want to, I'm not going to leave you with a financial kind of a report right now. I'm going to walk you through some data points as we move into that standardized reporting next month. But it is critical to understand our position. And Nancy's exactly right. How we pay for fire season depends when fire season happens. And really in the biennium, 2018 happened at the end of our biennial budget when we had no general fund appropriations. Our limitations on other funds were almost exhausted. So that's when agencies really get in a pinch. This biennium, it is at the, you know, fire season 2021 is at the beginning of the biennium. And like I mentioned, we had a significant increase in general fund, which will allow us to access that fire protection general fund appropriation. To give you a sense of the magnitude, typically we looked at $55 million being available to us through that mechanism. Prior to reconciliation, we're looking at, you know, $80 to $85 million available to us. But Nancy's right, this isn't a long-term solution. We can't count on the bad fire seasons coming at the beginning of the biennium and all of that. We have to work on something a little more durable, like she says. As we get into next fiscal year, next fire season, it's unlikely that we have the appropriations to tap into. So we'll have to look at our lending partners to fill in that gap. So definitely need long-term, although you'll hear in some of the numbers I'm framing up, as of now, we're in pretty good shape. Cash balance in your report that you have in front of you, not much has changed, although there has been some a few nuggets of activity there. Our cash balance right now is $53 million, but we did just get a bunch of timber revenue in this morning. So, you know, we always talk a large fire and FEMA reimbursements and money coming through, but the steady revenue is timber revenue coming in. Just this morning, we had $9 million deposits, mostly timber revenue. So once we get that pulled in, we got to do some accounting work to pull it in from Treasury. But we'll have a total cash balance of over $60 million. You know, it's been quite a long time since we've had cash balances like that. It won't stay at $60 million too long because we're going to have some costs hitting that pretty hard. But that's pretty impressive. Accounts receivable, Carla mentioned this morning, $87 million on the books. Some of that is likely to show up really soon. A large portion of it, $51 million, is with FEMA in the form of public assistance grants, which does seem to come in faster, or other agencies have been seeing that money faster than we typically see with FMAG grants. So it's pretty exciting to think we might see, you know, near $50 million in the near future. And as Carla mentioned, $18 million of large outstanding large fire costs, or outstanding large fire costs. That's significant. The amount of work that fire finance and admin finance staff have put on getting that number down is just astronomical. Can't give them kudos enough. Ron mentioned this, large fire costs are currently at $20 million gross with $6 million net costs. We typically focus on the net cost because that's what the state needs to pay at the end of the day. But from a cash management perspective, it's truly the gross costs that matter. You know, $28 million is going to come across our books sooner or later. Some of it is soon, you know, within that $28 million, some of it is immediate because it's our payroll, all our staff out on the fires, and we pay that every month. Some of it is very short term, private vendors that are paying, that we contract with. Some of it is long term, federal partners that we need to you know, that will ultimately invoice us. And that's one of the nuances of projecting where we are in our cash situation is $28 million gross, but what shows up when? And we're getting more sophisticated on our understanding of when that's happening. And we have some products in play that you'll undoubtedly see as our reporting matures. On our accounts payable front, I wanted to leave you kind of a snapshot. So Doug and Ron really framed up the fire season to date, and we're not seeing that on the administrative side yet. There's usually a lag time between fires on the ground and when we see the bills coming in the door. Typically, it's 30 days before we really start seeing things. Our accounts payable right now is only at $11 million, and it's, you know, seeing that much fire on the landscape, that doesn't make sense. But we're going to see that. We've been tracking outstanding costs to get some of those interim charges we know are coming that aren't quite in our books. And we have a tracker out there now that we're implementing that'll inform a lot of our projections. And there's $16 million of costs on the district's level. Still doesn't account for a lot of what we're seeing on the fire side. To give you a sense of what I'm talking about, right now we're spending between $100,000 to $175,000 a day. During a bad fire season, we've seen $2 to $2.5 million a day go out the door. So that's the magnitude of that, that spectrum. Those high numbers, $2 million, those are pretty, you know, extreme. There's a lot of aviation, a lot of, large air tankers. Usually it's well above just $100,000, but we anticipate seeing those accounts payable come across our door any week now, because that's typically the time when we see that. In addition, the last large number we can't forget about, I mentioned the timber revenue really coming in on our accounts revenue side, but that does come with our quarterly county payment that we have to disperse. And unfortunately, one of those falls smack in the middle of fire season, and that's July 31st. So that's something we always have to manage every fire season. And right now it's projected to be 23 to 24 million. So that's a check we have to write at the end of the month. So those are all the things we manage and kind of juggle as we factor in our cash solvency. So like I said, I wasn't going to be giving you a report per se, but just some data points to see where we're at. But right now with cash in hand, available general fund appropriation, and the AR we have on our books, we're in a pretty good position. But you see what the fire is doing, and that number can literally, that cash can get burned up pretty quick, figuratively speaking. Any questions on the cash situation? Brenda. Jim.
You want to take it? Okay. Just a quick question. You mentioned the timber revenues, and half of that's going to have to get, or more, I guess, has to go back to the counties. Is the timber revenue similar to what it has been in the past few years, or is it higher or lower, roughly?
I don't know if Liz is back there to better speak to it. It seems to have not slowed down. You know, it's been the last few months, there's been significant timber revenue. I can't speak overall, and Liz may have a better answer to that. But, from the financial side, we haven't seen in our micro lens a slowdown.
Thank you.
Carla Chambers. Bill, thank you. And Nancy, thank you. If I look at our cash position and our accounts receivable and what's left to invoice, I think we're at about $162 million. If I look at our costs, we still have three more districts we're going to find some costs in. What we owe the counties and our gross, our large fire costs, not our net, we're about 87. Mm-hmm. So we're going to roll about 80 million into the new biennium, if you will, of cash before we apply it to the new, before we look at the new biennium. Mm-hmm. That still doesn't feel like a big buffer to me. And I hear what you're saying. We're at the beginning of the biennium. And I only make that point because, in this kind of a fire environment, which the scientists tell us we're going to just continue to see, and we are continuing to see, And it really does depend on who has to manage those costs. While we are really gaining altitude on understanding the big picture of where we're at, it still is, there's not a big buffer there, and which just continues to beg the question of our relationships. And I think we've just, you know, really made progress with the treasurer's office and e-board and the governor's office. But I can't overstate the need for this agency to come out of this silo mentality and really keep on top of where we're at on the large picture here. Because when you've got these kind of costs and this kind of environment, that financial knowledge will really continue to be very important to us. But thank you for your leadership, because I feel like we have, you know, really made a lot of progress the last 3 months.
Nancy Hirsch here. There's a statement I would like to highlight in the financial report when maybe following in the future days, you'll have a little more time to go back through in detail. But this to me really says a lot. And I just want to really recognize that this is going back to, and Bill has spoken to it here today, and I know many of you understand this, but it has been a long haul over the last couple of years with really, I'd say, a pretty small group of people working behind the scenes and working relationships with our federal agency counterparts and improving a lot of things. So the sentence here, it says, continued system improvements, large fire cost recovery efforts, revenue inflows, and a substantial increase in the biennial budget has placed essentially the department in the best position possible. What I want to highlight is, you know, one, the continued system improvements is really about the data management piece and building bridges between siloed systems, right? So those are excellent, and that's going to allow us to do things in a repeatable way. The large fire cost recovery efforts, you know, that this, as I was just mentioning, has to do with a whole new approach that had to be agreed to through relationship building and building trust with our federal counterpart agencies. And that the fact is where you would see these large fires. So the ones that we're talked to here today, fires like the Bootleg Fire, fires like the Elbow Fire, where we are in these cost share agreements. This last fire season was the first time in the history of, you know, at least the last decade or more, that all agencies committed to basically reconciling those within a 2-year period. So we're 80-90% there already, which enabled us to then go and ask for those reimbursements on the public assistance grants. And so just the combination of these things, that system, that commitment, as far as I know, still stands for this fire season. And that allows for us to then have the revenue inflows on a significant faster timeline than we have seen, and agree that it doesn't, you know, give us a lot of room. You know, I think we all have to recognize that when you look at a few years back, the total cost of large fire cost in the state of Oregon, or you see the numbers out of California, you know, we were lucky that September happened, or the fires in September happened in September. Those types of events happening in June or July that would be on the landscape for a sustained period of time, those costs would have been substantially more. Yeah. And so those numbers would change that $70 million, you know, dollar average in a heartbeat. So I definitely look at this very, you know, realistically, and I hope really all Oregonians do. I know that we appreciate the board's oversight and support as we continue to work forward on this and come to some solutions. So thanks.
And Carla, you're right. There is no big buffer. I mean, a lot of our management strategies deals with timing and how do we, you know, manage county payments and how accounts payable comes in, because, you know, we are reliant on what we have available, certainly when those start dwindling. And that's actually a good nexus to bringing up Liz. Brenda, I think we can speak to a little more to your question.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Bill. For the record, my name is Liz Dent. I serve as the State Forest Division Chief. And just wanted to provide a little bit more information, Brenda, for your question. So I think to give a better, larger perspective over time, timber revenue has been steadily increasing since 2010, with a high in 2019 of $147 million that year, that fiscal year, largely reflecting the timber. Definitely reflecting the timber market. The actual volume sold has not changed, stays set pretty steady over that time. So then compared to 2020, when it came back down to $105 million. So rather than seeing that, though, as a decrease, I would say that there was a peak in 2019 relative to just a really incredible timber market. So as we project into the future, we're seeing and expecting that to be pretty steady to around $120 million per year for timber revenue. That's into the agency. And then, of course, there's the distribution to the counties with the remaining revenue staying with the agency.
Thank you, Liz.
All right. I see we're way beyond time. I want to just quickly touch on MGO. So we didn't put a report in. We are transitioning, like Nancy mentioned, to Cal providing oversight. Carla mentioned keeping up with our systems, and certainly MGO and our commitment to accountability is as important. Documents or procedures, policies, all of that kind of thing is just as important as all those systems. Because a big part of MGO was codifying what we had in place. You know, we had a lot of improvements going on before MGO even got here, but making them robust, durable, all that kind of stuff was very important. And Cal's going to play a big role in that. So we're looking forward to his expertise. And that will certainly inform the reporting that the board will see as we move forward. We did have four recommendations due in June 30th. Around cost shares and the use of organ buys. Staff performed all the tasks that needed to be done on those. You saw last time in the implementation management plan, very detailed breakdown of what needed to be done, and staff checked all of that off. And all of those have been operationalized and are in progress now. In fact, I mentioned how we are going to go beyond some of the MGO recommendations and enhance them. Our work's moving so fast that we actually, part of our effort to understand our outstanding costs affected the procedures we put in place for one of those recommendations. So we're already modifying what we just finished. I mean, that's how fast and rapid we're moving on our process improvement efforts. We do have a final step in one of those recommendations. Part of our leadership transition, there was some of our governance structure around policy approval needed to be clarified. So we have a policy to sign there, but the operational components of those recommendations are in front of us. But that's totally a leadership miss. Staff, you know, did everything they needed to do. The next recommendation is due October 31st, and that's focused on Board of Forestry oversight. So you're going to have a lot of input on that one, and we're looking forward to Cal working with everybody involved on moving that one. The next batch of four recommendations is due in December for this year. After that, it's all the following year. Those are focused on accounts receivable and invoicing. And a couple of them staff are actively engaged on, and a few other are on hold pending, you know, some capacity due to fire seasons. But we fully anticipate and have confidence those will make deadlines. So we're looking, I feel confident in what MGO looks like, and I believe you'll see a report coming soon when we start onboarding Cal and MGO on that effort. So more to come.
Great. Any other questions? We are a little bit behind schedule, but is there anything else? Well, if not, thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Chair Kelly.
Really
members of the board.
Jim, Nancy, go ahead.
Thank you, Bill. And I really just have to thank Bill, his crew. I don't think anyone can really appreciate the complexity of the budget even as he's operationally, right, programmatically, but mechanically that he spoke to, as well as working with our legislative fiscal office and our partner there in Matt Stainer. I mean, these folks have been working through a lot of, like, you know, legacy systems and with a whole lot of numbers and a whole lot of different bills when usually we would typically have one or two. So I just want to say thanks because the products that were brought forward here just in time for the meeting took a lot of effort. So thanks.
Great.